punctual. As committee chair, that is one of the things I'm really going to work hard on. So hopefully 10:30 will mean 10:30, but thank you all for being here. We'll sufficiently punish those who are already late. So today's agenda is pretty straightforward, and I really wanted to spend the most time in a discussion literally around this rectangular table here with some introductions, both of members. Give us a little sense of your background as well as staff. And we are fully staffed and got some all-stars with us. So let me give you just a brief 20,000 feet from at least the chairman's perspective. Again, welcome to the Senate Jobs and Economic Growth Committee. My sense and my perspective is that all 67 members of this Senate were elected talking about jobs, that there's not necessarily anything partisan about that. And given the kind of economy and recession and, yes, budget situation that we're in, that what this committee does, what this committee talks about, and what this committee considers and ultimately passes is going to be important. It's going to be important for this particular session. I also believe there's a lot we can work on with the new administration and the new governor. I'm not personally interested in wasting a lot of time on things that aren't going to get far. And on things that aren't going to help. So the one particular thing that I wanted to emphasize for members and staff and also for our guests today, welcome to all of you, is that we want to spend particular time in this committee focusing on private sector job growth. What can we do here at the state? What can we do as state policymakers to help position Minnesota for economic recovery? And when that recovery happens, what can we do to speed ahead of other states and help the U.S. speed ahead of other countries? So I want to particularly encourage all of the members to think about the private sector businesses, small, medium, and large, that you have worked with, that you represent, that you have heard from, particularly over the last year and over the last campaign. We want to bring those ideas and those kind of conversations into this committee room. So that's kind of a 20,000 foot overview from my standpoint, and we can get into some back and forth. But I did want to formally start this committee today with some introductions from members and from staff, and maybe I'll start with arguably the most important person at the table, which is the committee administrator. And that's Amy Berger to my right here. So, yes, Amy does a little work for me, but she works for you, and she works for this committee. So, Amy, why don't you introduce yourself, and then Emily, and we'll go around this way.
Hey, I'm Amy Berger. I'm the committee administrator, like Senator Michelle mentioned. I have a good history of legislative background. I've worked for the Senate and the House, and former U.S. Senator Norm Coleman for a long time. So I'm familiar with the process. And I'm really excited to be a part of the committee and back working at the Senate and get to know all of you.
And one of the first assignments for Amy is going to be, I'm going to try to set up meetings with each individual member. And Amy and also Emily, who you're about to meet, can help schedule those things. But I know our calendars are about to just fill up in ways that that are sometimes hard to predict and manage. But as the chair of this committee, I really want to work with each of you and talk about what your personal ideas may be. So that'll be an important priority of mine and of staff in the next couple weeks here. Emily.
Hi, my name's Emily Pugh, and I am Senator Michelle's legislative assistant. And this will be my fourth legislative session with Senator Michelle. And I'm excited to be here as the committee legislative assistant and look forward to working with all of you.
And I'm going to be rude here and give a little bit of an intro for Senator Lilly, just to make it clear. So Senator Ted Lilly is the vice chair of this committee, and seated next to him is Senator Metzen, the ranking member, and I'm going to lean on both of those guys pretty heavily. So I wanted to sit them together at the table. There we go.
Get that in.
There we go. Detente.
Get an AP aware.
We're already off to a good start. So thanks for letting me interrupt with the intros. Ted.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Ted Lilly, and I am the newly elected senator from Senate District 56, which is Woodbury and Stillwater and basically all of the communities in that general vicinity. I'm a small business owner. I run Lilly Suburban Newspapers. I'm a co-publisher of Lilly Suburban Newspapers. We are a small business, a third-generation business. We have about 85 employees and have been in business since 1938. We're located in North St. Paul, but we serve most of the suburban communities around St. Paul. And that's an interesting perspective, I think, for this committee to have that private perspective, private business perspective of what challenges are in front of us to hire employees, to get people working. I also have been very active in the chamber world. I was a 2007 chair of the board of the St. Paul Area Chamber of Commerce. I've been active in the Oakdale Business and Professional Association. I was the president of that group. And again, what we learn by working in those associations and chambers is what it takes to hire people, what it takes to represent people, and to get this economy rolling again. And I think that's going to be the focus of this committee, is how can we find ways to put people back to work and create jobs for all of the families in the communities that we serve. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Lilly. Senator Metzen.
I think you have enough time.
Nice to see you again.
Good to see you, yes. Sitting next to Lilly, I'm thinking maybe he'll put a couple of my press releases in his paper. You know. He forgets once in a while that, you know, the things we've done.
We can work on that.
But I'm Senator Metzen from the South St. Paul, West St. Paul, Mendota Heights area, District 39, and I believe this is the most important committee in the Minnesota Senate. I really do, for the things we should be doing and things we can accomplish. So happy to be here.
I very much appreciate you stating that. And so clearly, Senator Metzen, and my sense is if we actually want to get things signed into law, that in most cases that'll mean that people like you and I have to agree on it. So,
well, Fred, I'll never forget you. No, I really believe that. I we've been friends since you got here, and we can get things done, truly.
Good.
And create some jobs in the state. So
appreciate it.
We had some successes in the last session, and the jobs bill was pretty important. We think that we passed last session. We think that created about 16,000 jobs, and so we'll do some stuff.
Well, I appreciate that, and I will note that I have some role models in mind as I chair a committee, and Senator Metzen would be one of them.
Thank you,
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, everyone. My name is Jeremy Miller, Senator from District 31. I represent Houston, Fillmore, and Winona counties. My background is also in business and accounting. Our family has a scrap and recycling business in Winona that dates back to 1910. My two brothers and I are the fourth generation, and I handle all of the accounting and finance, buying and selling of commodities for our business. And I look forward to working together with each one of you to restore jobs, restore confidence in the state of Minnesota. We need to obviously work on regulations, the permitting process, the tax structure. So those will be some priorities of, I think, this committee. So, again, I look forward to working together with each of you. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Miller. Senator Howe.
So glad to be here. I represent Senate District 28, which is Goodhue County, Wabasha County, and part of Winona County. So I run up to Senator Miller's district.
Yeah, you'll come
and,
up.
As soon as we're done. I'm the former mayor of Red Wing.
Yeah.
Yesterday, as I took this new role, in a previous life, I worked for Sears for about 20 years, 10 on the corporate side and 10 on my own individual Sears stores. Pleasure becoming the chairman of the Sears Dealer Store Organization, where I represented 700 independent Sears dealer owners in all 50 states, and we did about $1.5 billion in sales. And, I've had the pleasure of listening to Bill Blazer's presentation on Grow Minnesota. This last year, we had the Mayor's Blue Ribbon Panel on economic development in Red Wing. We had some concerns over our Port Authority and some other challenging business environments that we had. And I think one of the major takeaways that we had in that is that we need to focus on business retention and growing our businesses from inside. And I think this is going to be very important to me, and I think we really do need to create a much more business-friendly, pro-business environment in our state. So I look forward to working with each and every one of you.
Thank you, Senator. We can't call you mayor anymore. Senator Torres-Ray, Happy New Year.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm excited, delighted to be serving in your committee. This is an exciting opportunity for me. I'm Patricia Torres-Ray, and I represent District 62, which is Southeast Minneapolis. And I am very interested in working with you to open opportunities for women and minorities and really look at how we can work together to create more jobs in those areas where we really need to open opportunities for these sectors. I am particularly interested in urban and rural areas where I know we have significant groups where we don't have opportunities for them. So I look forward to work with you and the rest of the members in those specific areas.
Great. Senator Tomasoni.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm David Tomasoni. I represent the Senate District 5, which is basically the heart of the Iron Range. My population center is between Hibbing and Hoyt Lakes, but the district itself is about 80 miles square, representing about 62 different townships. So it's a diverse district. Jobs is what my job is all about, and having been the former chair of the economic, the finance side of this committee, I know exactly what we're dealing with here, and creating jobs is what it's all about. And I want to tell you that if you keep getting this kind of attendance in this committee, I'm going to be very surprised. But this is a pretty good start. It must mean that nobody has anything else to do today. But thank you very much, and I appreciate being here.
I was really excited when I saw Senator Tomasoni's name on the list. And Senator Tomasoni, you have to come to room 208, which is where I'm officing now, and check out what's on the walls. Because it's a lot of hockey stuff, but it's not going to be the kind of high school hockey teams that you like.
Did you steal it from my office or what? Come on,
buddy. Let's go across the table then, Mr. Jensen.
Mr. Chairman and members, I'm Dave Jensen, the fiscal staff for the committee. And what I do, I review the proposals that come before the committee and prepare the appropriation bills for the committee. And I'm also the staff for the Capital Investment Committee. So these two work closely together, and it's all kind of statewide programs that are approved in this committee. So I'm available to help you with the budget process and the details. So.
Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair and committee members, good morning. I'm Carla Nelson from District 30, which is Rochester, Chatfield, Dover, Eota, Elgin, Plainview, and Stuartville. I'm a small business owner in Rochester. I have an insurance and financial services firm. I know some of you from my time in the House. I'm a former House member, former Rochester teacher, and I'm really glad to be a part of this committee. I just think that there's probably never been a time where a committee such as this has had a greater impact and a greater need in the state of Minnesota. We absolutely need to become a more job-friendly state. We can do that through many areas. I look forward to working on this committee to get some of those things done. I know that Governor Dayton also shares that interest on some of those issues, and we'll look at getting those things completed that we know can move Minnesota forward. And I look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, my name's John Peterson. I represent Senate District 15, which is St. Cloud, Wade Park, St. Augusta, and Rockville up in central Minnesota. I had been serving on the St. Cloud City Council and recently obviously had been given an opportunity to serve with you the next couple years, which I'm very grateful for that opportunity and looking forward to those challenges. I'm quite uncertain. I'm the first concrete block manufacturer to ever serve here in the Senate, and that's what I do. I manufacture concrete block. We have 75 employees. I go to work every day with 75 working families in central Minnesota, and they are absolutely concerned about the job situation. They're absolutely concerned about their wages. They need their overtime back, and that's what I hope to help work towards, Mr. Chair, and your committee, and I'm grateful for the chance to be here. Thanks.
Well, and Senator Peterson, you and I have had a chance to have a conversation, and I really like what you said the other day about confidence. I don't know if you want to share that
sure.
anyway
yep.
this morning.
It's important to note, you know, right now in the state of Minnesota that 8 out of every 10 jobs in this state are at organizations that have 200 employees or less. You know, now these are people that can go into the office tomorrow and they can pick up the phone and they can choose to hire somebody. So we need to find out why they're not willing to do that. And I believe it focuses around confidence relating specifically to the cost of energy, relating specifically to the cost of health care. In addition to that, their tax situation. When they have uncertainty in those three areas, they are going to be the good conservative employers that they are, and they're going to preserve the jobs that they have, and they're going to go into a holding pattern until they have the confidence to move forward. And I think this legislature and I think this committee can give them the confidence to take that risk, hire people that they need to grow their organizations and to grow those organizations in Minnesota. Not to say that large businesses aren't important, because they absolutely are, because we all know small businesses that can become large businesses in just a generation. 25 to 30 years, these organizations can be large businesses right here making a home in Minnesota. So.
Thank you. Senator Kielash, my partner from Bloomington.
Bloomington, yes. I'm Senator Ken Kielash. I'm represent Richfield, Bloomington, and parts of southwest Minneapolis. My area includes the Mall of America, the airport, Fort Snelling, all areas where there is good transportation opportunities, and I kind of look at developing jobs around the transportation sectors and in the economy, as well as looking for new starts and opportunities for the businesses that are currently here. The airport has lots of expansion talking about. We have lots of plans for Bloomington, as Jeff knows, and I'd like to see some of that going. And one of the things that I'll be concerned about is it's one thing to invest in jobs, but we don't need more jobs that require subsidies by either through food stamps or affordable housing or whatever. We need jobs that pay the full freight of the cost of living for people. And we can't keep adding low wage jobs and say we're going to, you know, cut the support systems that we need that. So it's just I'll be watching to make sure that we get good jobs.
Thank you, Senator Kielash. Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. I'm Dick Cohen from District 64 in St. Paul. Senator Peterson indicated that he's the first concrete block manufacturer to be in the Senate. My best guess is I'm probably not the first lawyer to serve in the Minnesota State Senate, as best I know. But looking forward to serving this committee. I've been on the finance end of this for many years, but I've not been on the policy part of this, I think, maybe since I was a freshman here. So it's been quite a while. And so I'm looking forward to the discussion as Minnesota attempts to come out of what has been a long-lasting and significant recession, to find out how we as legislators can help promote job growth, what we can do in terms of both from a legislative perspective as well as an executive perspective. I think Governor Dayton is going to appoint his new Commissioner of Commerce within the next day or so, and I'm looking forward to a discussion about how we can direct the agencies better than has been the case in past years to be a partner in creation of jobs, more so than has been the case.
Any announcements regarding that, Senator Cohen?
What's that mean?
There you go. Well, thank you, Senator Cohen, and I will note, especially for some of the newer members around the table, your experience in this body, and particularly as the Senate Finance Chair, I think will be very useful to this particular committee, amongst others, as we go forward in 2011.
I'll be happy to tell you what you ought to do.
You always were. Senator DeCreif.
Good morning. My name is Senator Al DeCreif. I'm from Senate District 25. That includes all of Le Sueur County, most of Rice County, not including Faribault. Goes up into Scott County, up to the Belle Plaine area, and out into part of Sibley County. Includes the towns of Northfield, Belle Plaine, New Prague. I'm a business owner, small business owner. Been president of my corporation for over 30 years, And what I think we absolutely have to do is we have to look at ways that that we can again put up our shingle in Minnesota that we are open for business. That's going to take, I think, a number of things. Our overall business ranking, I think, is fairly low in our state. And I think our business and corporate tax rate comes into play in part of that. Overreaching government regulations that are holding our businesses back as opposed to other businesses in other states. I think there's a portion of what we're going to be judged on that I think is going to be have some federal influences. No matter what we do, other states are also going to be trying to improve their business climate to draw businesses and grow jobs in their states. I think we have to do a better job. So where I think we are, we're not high on that list, we have to make sure that Minnesota lets businesses know that why they should grow jobs here, and we have to give them reasons to. And the number one reason that a business would come here is because they can make money here. If we don't allow them to make money, they will go someplace else. And they'll both move out of the state, and it'll be very difficult to bring others back in. So we have to, I think, keep our ear to the ground of what's happening throughout the nation and make sure that we are leaders in that, moving in that direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Daley.
Good morning, all. Senator Ted Daley from Eagan, representing Senate District 38, Eagan, and a little bit of Burnsville, the eastern part of Burnsville. And I want to touch on two things, a little bit of my background and some of my thoughts about jobs and the economy. By way of being a CPA and a small business general manager, I've had the opportunity to understand the concerns of small businesses. And many of the thoughts that were shared by both Senator Peterson and Senator Kreif, I would echo those. Not to be argumentative or difficult, but I don't think we at this table are going to be creating jobs. What we will do here is set the conditions so that the private sector can create the jobs. So with our vision and our efforts, we can create those conditions working together, and I look forward to doing that with everyone. As a general manager for that small manufacturing company, the three big things that we were concerned with were taxes, regulation, and health care, and probably in that order. So with those in mind, that's some of the things that I'd like to share with you and look forward to working with everyone.
Thank you, Senator Daley. So let's continue with staff here. Please.
Mr. Chair and members, good morning. My name is Carlin Doyle Fontaine, and I am Senate counsel for this committee. In the past, I staffed the budget division for this area. I also worked with the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. My role, I guess, is I can draft bills for this subject area if you have something you want drafted. I also, if there's a bill that we're going to hear, I will draft amendments for that bill. So if you have something you may want an amendment, you can come to me for that. Also, if there's a legal research question or an issue a constituent has that is legal in nature, or if you want me to ask a question to an agency, I can do that as well. And I guess that if you have any questions of a legal nature relating to this, I can help you with anything. I work for all of the senators, but mostly primarily for this budget or this area. So
thank you.
I look forward to working with you. Thanks.
Thank you for your help.
Mr. Chair, members, good morning. Dan Mickelberg, Majority Research, research to this committee, as well as I've worked with the Tax Committee as well. Not at, seated at the table, but want to make an introduction just to joining us as new caucus staff member, Corinne Niska, who joined us in our research area as well. So thank you.
Well, thank you. That's a good start. I wonder if, Charlene, do you want to say, at least for a week, you can, I know you're not actually at a microphone, but just if you could stand up so at least the members can see you.
My surgery.
Oh, so, yeah, she's had surgery on her feet. I'm totally abusing her here.
I have been the analyst for the Business, Industry, and Jobs Committee and the Economic Development Budget Division for the last 4 years. But my last day is Friday, so I will be heading to Madison, Wisconsin. I'll be working for the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection there. But previously, you know, in the person who replaces me, can do any research that you're looking, any questions that you have that you need answers for. That's what I would have done. I work with Dave and with Carlin, and kind of work as a team, and I would have been always open for any questions. So.
Great.
Thank you.
And we have a minority researcher at the table there, too. I don't know if you want to just stand up and say your name just so we recognize a face.
I'm Craig Janisich, and I work in Senate.
Great. Thank you, Craig. And I would just note, having been played a part in the transition over the last 60 days, I want to thank particularly the staff at this table, but also the staff throughout the Capitol and the state office building, where there have been a number of changes. Some things have been clear, probably some things have not been all that clear, and I appreciate you guys hanging with us as we've changed some of the committee structure and figuring out new assignments, and that's probably not even all complete yet, but a special thanks to the staff, and we're going to rely heavily on you going forward, so thank you. A couple more comments, just as a follow-up from me, and thank you to the members for your introductions and teeing up some thoughts. As we went around the table, I actually was I was excited to see how many different parts of Minnesota are at this table. You know, we've got a ranger at the table. We've got Minneapolis. We've got St. Paul. We've got other regional growth centers. We've got suburbs. This is a pretty good representation of the state, and just a great set of skills and resumes and talents that all of you have. So I feel very lucky to be chairing this committee and working with all of you. Senator Kreif made a comment that I want to follow up on a little bit. There's only so much that a state legislature can do when you're talking about jobs and economic growth, and particularly in the private sector. I think we all come to this with some humility, that there's no special button that we can just flip and suddenly the Minnesota economy just turns on a dime. So I have picked that up in conversations from all of you and certainly from others in this room. If there was a switch, boy, we would have found it already. But I do believe that there are some basics we can work on. This committee, very admittedly, has some pretty broad territory and jurisdiction. And I think that's by design. I would really like this to be the first place that business growth ideas start. It's probably not going to be the last committee that an idea or a proposal goes to. I mean, a lot will need to go to taxes. Boy, we'll get into regulatory relief, and those will go to other committees. But I would really want this committee to be the first place where we can talk about economic growth for this state. We're going to spend most of this session talking about a budget. We're going to spend most of this session talking about spending cuts, tax increases. And I do hope that we can be a place where we add a third item onto that list: spending, taxes, growth. There is another way to help get out of a budget problem, and that is economic growth. And I hope that this can be the place where that conversation starts, and I thank all of you in advance for being a part of that. So with that as kind of a lead-up, what I had hoped to then get into today was a presentation by a group called Grow Minnesota, and I will let the testifiers describe what Grow Minnesota is, but let me give you my brief understanding of it and why I think it was important for us to hear this, and important for us to hear this on the first day. And that's because this is a group that has actually gone around the state talking to large, medium, and small businesses, large, medium, and small job creators. And so over the last several years, they've conducted hundreds, if not thousands, of interviews and surveys of job creators and asked them, how are things going? What do you need? What do you need to succeed in Minnesota? And I think that's almost verbatim. That's the job of this committee. we need to find out those answers. And so in this case, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. And I asked Mr. Olson and Mr. Blazer to come in. Mr. Olson from the State Chamber, I understand you're going to lead things off here. So thank you for coming this morning, Mr. Olson. And for members, if I can say that there is a PowerPoint. You have a copy of the PowerPoint in your packet. And what I would prefer is if we let them go through this PowerPoint discussion first, and then I will open it up to recognize any members for questions as a follow-up. So with that, Mr. Olson, Happy New Year. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Michelle. It's our pleasure, our honor to be here today. The good news for you is I'm going to let Bill handle most of this because he is the brains behind Grow Minnesota. I'll just give you a brief introduction on some of the things we're going to cover today. I'm just going to give you the background on what Grow Minnesota is and where it started. Bill will handle a lot of the details and what we have learned, as you've mentioned, on the road. This program started about 8 years ago, and actually it started when I was having dinner with a small plastic injection molding person who had about 60 employees, and another person who does testing, data recognition. Anytime you use a number two pencil, we haven't done that for a while, but anytime you used to do that, Russ Hagen and his company does that, and he has about 600 employees in Minnesota. And they were telling me how often they're recruited to come to other states. And actually, I was surprised that Scott this would tell me how often, 60 employees, you wouldn't think he would be getting 18 to 20 calls a year from governors from other states saying, we'd love to have your company in our state. So I asked them both, does anybody from Minnesota ever call you? And the answer was no. And I actually did go home that night, and I called Bill, and I said, you know, somebody's got to do this. Somebody's got to thank these companies for being in Minnesota, and somebody's got to find out what it takes to keep them here. So that's where Grow Minnesota started some 8 years ago. It's private sector driven, although we're doing a number of things with DEED right now, but we wanted to get it started using private sector dollars and private sector volunteers. It's sponsored and paid for through the dues of Minnesota Chamber members, so we're proud of that. We're also very proud of the fact that we work with 54 local chambers statewide, and so much of this work is done at the local level. And Bill will tell you what we learned in the some 800 calls we made last year. There's three parts to the program, the part where we actually thank them, and most of them fall off their chairs, very honestly, when somebody thanks them for being here. But three parts: business retention, business assistance. About 20 to 25% of these calls end up with some kind of business assistance, and that can be anywhere from a curb cut to I want to meet the mayor, I want to meet, you know, the governor's never been to IBM, that kind of thing. And then business expansion. So if you look at the map, we feel pretty good about our coverage. If we don't have a local chamber that Grow Minnesota is working with, our staff team and CEOs that we find from within our membership will work in that community. So we feel very strongly that we have statewide coverage. And again, three parts of the visit. Thank you. How can we help your business? And how can we make the business environment better? And actually, there's no better person, I think, in Minnesota actually to do this job than Bill Blazer. Bill has been with the chamber almost 20 years. Many of you will know that he was our lead lobbyist for many years on a number of issues. Bill likes to make progress on things, and sometimes he makes to make progress, no offense, in a little more quick time period than sometimes happens up here. So I asked Bill to run this, and he's been doing a fantastic job. He does the majority of these calls. He knows more people in Minnesota than I would argue almost anybody does, and I'm going to turn it over to Bill to walk you through the results. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Thank you. Mr. Blazer, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bill Blazer. I'm responsible for public affairs and economic development at the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And David, thank you for that introduction. Let me review with you what we heard from Minnesota companies through the Grow Minnesota program over a period from roughly September of 2009 through August of 2010. We visited about 825 companies. I want to emphasize that this is not a random sample of Minnesota businesses. We have 54 local chamber partners around the state. They help us do these visits. In fact, they do the lion's share of them. And each of the local chambers decides who they're going to visit. So it's not random, but it's a lot of conversations. And it's always a one-on-one conversation between a local volunteer, the chamber executive, and then the senior most person at the organization that we're visiting. Important, 33% of the visits are revisits. We've seen some of these companies four, five, six times. In fact, one that I'm working with now, I've been there a dozen times since the 1st of July. The whole point of this is to build a relationship between Minnesota employers and the communities where they're doing business. We want them to have a much stronger attachment to our community so that when they think about expanding or when they think about have a tough decision to make, they're going to think favorably about Minnesota and our and the workers they have here. So we're working hard to build relationships with those companies. Based on the 826 visits, we provided direct assistance to about 110 of those companies. But in addition to that, and just to show you the importance and the significance of retention visits, we got a call in August from GE Aviation. They make jet engines. Their business is growing at about 22% a year. They heard about Grow Minnesota through their membership in the Minnesota Chamber, and they asked us to help them build their supply chain in Minnesota. So on December 7th of last year, we had 82 Minnesota manufacturers, small businesses, at the at a meeting in Bloomington where the companies had one-on-one meetings not only with GE Aviation, but also with a group of GE's first-tier suppliers. And the whole idea here was for those Minnesota businesses to have a chance to pitch their capabilities to a company that's growing very rapidly and needs to expand its supply chain in the upper Midwest. So, you know, you only see 826 companies, and maybe you're seeing some of them over and over again, but when word gets out that Minnesota wants to retain the companies that we've got, when you're knocking on doors and taking care of your current customers, our conclusion is that good things happen. It's GE Aviation. If we have time, I can tell you about a program that we ran for the Polad Family Foundation where we provided 92 Minnesota small businesses with loans and grants to help them make it through the recession. The only reason the Polad Foundation called Grow Minnesota was because of our relationships with those 54 chambers and 7 years of visiting Minnesota companies on a regular basis, so we had a sense of how they're doing and who, with a little bit of help through either a grant or a loan, we could help make it through the recession. The other good thing that happens when you do business retention is you do get calls about companies that want to expand. Last year, we worked with about a dozen companies on expansions. Five of those actually happened. They're actually under construction or being implemented. For example, Minnesota Rubber is expanding its plant in Litchfield. Barron's Manufacturing, Senator Miller has just built a new facility in Winona. We worked with them on that. You're not always successful. We had three companies that we lost. One, we couldn't find financing for a manufacturing facility in Minnesota, so they ended up in Texas. A second one, and these are complicated decisions, but a second one, I think our tax climate, particularly our personal income tax, had some effect in that company's decision not to stay in Minnesota. And right now we've got four that are pending. I think two of those that will retain 900 jobs in Minnesota are likely to be successful. There are over 100,000 businesses in Minnesota. We know that we can't stop and see all of them. But solve that problem, if you will, we created a program called the Business Connection. We did that in cooperation with the Department of Employment and Economic Development and also, frankly, with a very nice, generous grant from the McKnight Foundation. It's an online business assistance service, and it's meant to help the companies that we're not likely to visit. We see about 1,000 a year. We're never going to get around to everybody. And if the numbers hold up, I'd say that of those companies that we don't see, somewhere between 12 and 20% of them have a question that the good news is can be answered. They just don't know how to navigate the system to find that answer. So the business connection helps us do that. Just to emphasize the importance of Grow Minnesota and business retention generally, and then I'll tell you what we're hearing. Nobody says thank you often enough. David already referenced this, but business owners and managers are amazed. In fact, I can't tell you the number of times they've said to me, they point to the chair that I'm sitting in, and they say, you're the first person to sit in that chair who actually thanked me for having a business in Minnesota and then didn't ask me for a contribution to join an organization or to put my name on a list. It's a simple thing. And you get a lot of mileage out of it, but we just don't do it nearly often enough. And then, finally, one of the things we've learned, and sometimes the hard way, is that Minnesota companies have more choices than ever about where they can do their work. And it's not just manufacturers. It's our information services industry, even our ag industry. I just read an article in the Fargo paper about a company that's going to develop ethanol from sugar beets. Well, they're going to build the plant in North Dakota. And you kind of wonder, well, did they even think about Minnesota? I don't know. But so these businesses have choices, and we need to take care of our customers. And we did a survey last year of small businesses. 25% of the companies that we talked to told us when we asked them, where would you go for help if you had an issue doing business in your community, 25% of them said their local chamber of commerce, and 30% said the State Department of Employment and Economic Development. So not only is it important do they have choices, but there's an expectation from businesses that there are folks there to help them kind of navigate the business climate in Minnesota. So with that, let me give you an idea of what we heard. Keep in mind, it's not a random sample. We saw, like I said, about 825 companies. 30% of them are manufacturers, but they pretty much reflect the state's economy as a whole in terms of industry representation. Reasonably well distributed around the state. We don't see as many as we need to in west central Minnesota or in the far northwestern portion of the state, but we're doing pretty well in other parts. Most of the businesses that we're seeing are relatively small. 66% of them have fewer than 50 employees. We see the large ones, but we're seeing a lot of small companies as well. So what are they telling us? I think it's safe to say that the recession is still affecting the state's economy. In fact, I'd say it kind of casts a long shadow on the economy, and you're going to see that in a minute when I show you what they're telling us about their sales and profitability. Basically, what we see this year relative to last year is that the economy has stabilized. So, for example, this last year, 28% of the companies that we talked to said that their sales were relatively stable. A year ago, when we asked that question, only 19% said their sales were stable. And in fact, a year ago, 38% told us their sales were declining, and this year only 33% put their sales in that category. See the same when it comes to profitability. This year, about 35% said that their profits were relatively stable. A year ago, it was 26%. And a year ago, 39% said their profits were decreasing. This year, only 34%. So it's not like we're on the upswing. I think we're on the upswing. It's not a very steep curve, but it's pretty clear, at least from the Grow Minnesota visits, that the economy is much stabler today than it was in 2009, 2008. We asked companies about what they're doing to get ready for future growth. So, for example, we asked them about new product development or new services, things that they're likely to bring to market within the next 2 years. And the only reason I show you the slide, 61%, that's a reasonably healthy percentage. 8 years ago, when we started doing the Grow Minnesota visits in a stronger economy, that percentage was closer to 70%. just above 70, in fact. And one of the great lessons about the Minnesota economy is that in spite of all of the changes and the emerge and the development of a world economy, we still depend on the startup development and success of new companies. So having new ideas, new products, new services in the formative stages is really important to the health and vitality of the state's economy. So even though this number is still above 60%, the fact that it's dipped even a little bit is of cause for concern. We asked these businesses about their primary markets. And here, I think the most important number is that yellow wedge at the top of the pie chart. And that's the percent of companies that are reporting international sales. That actually has gone up over the last couple of years. It's at 7% now. 2 years ago, it was at 4%. The reason that that percent is so important is that everything that we see suggests that the Minnesota businesses that are able to reach customers outside of the U.S. are much more likely to not only recover, but to grow more rapidly, because the reality is that the world economy is growing or recovering much faster than the U.S. economy. So just to give you a couple of examples, I saw a story just the other day. Senator Tomasoni probably knows Magnetation. They just signed a 7-year contract to send iron ore, taconite, to Mexico. The strength, that order is built on the emergence and the growth of the Mexican economy. We've got a bunch of companies that are engaged in producing water management, sanitizing technology. Those companies in Minnesota are growing quite rapidly, and the reason they're growing rapidly is they are providing that technology to countries like India, where they're developing new middle classes and building infrastructure. I just read a story in the Bemidji paper about a company that makes a device to pick up the pipes that you use when you build a pipeline, Valley Industries, I think. They have a new way to pick up these really big pipes. I've never met the people who run the company. It's a great idea when you look at the number and the percent of countries that are going to be adding pipeline capacity. The fact that we've got a Minnesota company that has that technology, they have the opportunity to sell that all over the world because they've figured out a better way to pick up a really big piece of pipe and put it where it needs to go. So when you think about policies and what we do with respect to the development of our state's economy, one of the things I'd really urge you to do is to think about strategies that will help Minnesota companies develop customers and clientele outside the U.S. A big part of that, I think, is being clear and making it clear so that when folks from outside the U.S. come to Minnesota, that they think that they feel this is a welcoming environment, that that they feel comfortable doing business here. We really need to be fully integrated into the world economy, and that's what I think this chart suggests. We asked these companies about their fastest growing markets. And again, the international sales, it's still small, but at 6%, we're making some progress. The sales outside the United States, that 22% at the bottom of the pie chart, that's up from 15% a year ago. That's important because every time a Minnesota business makes a sale outside of Minnesota, it's bringing new dollars to our state. So the best is international export because of the nature of the world economy, but second best is selling stuff outside of Minnesota. So what do we see the next couple of years? We asked these companies about their plans, and as the slide says, promising but not without bumps. There is some hesitation, especially, I think, when it comes to actually adding facilities. So, for example, we asked them about whether or not they plan to expand in the next 2 years. 61% said no. A year ago, 59% said no. Really, no real change. There's a real, and I think this is the shadow of the recession. There's a lot of uncertainty as to whether or not we're in a long-term recovery, and I think that makes businesses reluctant to invest in bricks and mortar. And then we ask them about adding new jobs, and I think this might be the most challenging part of the equation. So 66% of these companies said that their employment would be relatively stable. And that's two-thirds. And actually, the good news is that a year ago, only 46% told us that their employment was going to be relatively stable. So, like I said, I think we've bottomed out. I think businesses are trying to figure out if it's a good time to add employees. And frankly, part of that equation is their cost structure. So they're looking at the healthcare legislation, for example, and trying to figure out if those changes in the law over the next few years make it easier or maybe make them more hesitant to add workers to their payroll. What is really most significant is if you look at the go back here for a second, the 27% who said they were actually going to increase their jobs in the next 2 years. What's interesting is if you go and ask the ones that tried to add employees in the previous year, so just as we're coming out of the recession, these folks are trying to add employees. Almost one in five of those companies said that they couldn't fill the job. So we're coming out, or we're still in, the most severe recession since the Great Depression, and 18% of the companies that we visited with, the ones that actually said they were trying to hire people, reported difficulty filling the jobs. And then you ask them, well, who's hard to find? And it really comes out specialty skills. So it's production workers, it's tool and die makers, it's machinists, those kinds of folks. The other category, those are professionals, people like CPAs or engineers. And what is really significant here is we've been asking these same questions for 8 years. So we've gone through a really good economy and a really bad economy. And what's consistent is that whether it's good or bad, businesses have trouble filling specialty skills and professional positions. We're not producing, whether it's a tool and die maker, a machinist, an engineer, CPA, whether it's a good economy or bad economy, we're not doing a good job of producing workers to fill those jobs, because even coming out of a recession, people are having trouble filling them. Let me go to the policy part of this. I can come back to some of these other slides if you want. So if you think about the Grow Minnesota visits and what these companies are telling us, and then put that into the context of state policy, there are a couple of lessons that we learn. First, and this is going to sound maybe simplistic, but it's worth thinking about, I'd urge you to think about the development of the state's economy and not economic development. Economic development, to most people, turns into a real estate deal. We got a piece of property, it's either vacant or it's available, we want to find somebody to build something on it. That's fine, that's important to do. But if you're making policy to try and add jobs in our state, you really need to think about how the state's economy is evolving and changing, and what we need to do to make those changes and that evolution as productive as possible. So focus on the development of the economy, and then related to that is to work on policies that will create a better environment for everybody. As one business owner told me, I said, well, what do we need to do? And he said, run a good state. So it's the roads, the bridges, the telecommunication system, the education, K-12 higher ed. For every one comment on the higher ed system, we get 12 on the K-12 system. Businesses time again say, I can teach X to weld, I can't teach him to read and write. So that, that's part of running a good state. It's critical. If you're going to have a successful business, you need a competent workforce. And then the issue of incentives always comes up. Anybody who's going to expand a company or build a company in Minnesota, one of the things they always ask you about are the incentives. It's just like, I don't know how many of you get coupons for a sale at Macy's. You guys can raise your hands. We all get them. There's one every day. Macy's has conditioned me, the customer, to want to have a sale. Well, all of the economic development incentives around the country have conditioned Minnesota businesses to ask the same thing, whether they need them or not. They're going to keep asking, but that's what the competition is doing. So they're important, but from our perspective, the most important thing is to make sure that we're doing the basics well. And we can get an enormous amount of mileage out of doing business retention visits and using the tools that we have in law right now to provide assistance to Minnesota companies. So based on the Grow Minnesota visits, just a couple of other policy ideas that come out of those visits. First, with respect to state services, it's run a good state and prioritize what we're spending on. Don't raise taxes. No Minnesota business that I've talked to can afford an increase on their expense side, and that's what taxes turn out to be. Secondly, permitting. We worked with a small business in St. Peter that needed to add a stainless steel sink at their business in order to complete an expansion. They filed the papers. They needed to get a permit through the Department of Health. They don't hear anything. They finally call the department. Where's the permit? Well, your application is incomplete. Well, why didn't anybody call the company and say, hey, you forgot to fill out line 13? We hear it's so businesses don't tell us that they think the standards are too high. What they tell us is that the process is too long and too unpredictable. When they file the application, they want to know that it's complete. They want to know how long it's going to take to process it. They want to know how much it's going to cost and when they're going to get a yes or a no. And that's something that we ought to be able to work on. And then third, energy. Increasingly, we're hearing from Minnesota businesses that their cost, particularly of electricity, is making it more challenging for them to be successful and competitive in Minnesota. And there, we think the challenge is simply we could make a big improvement by aligning electric rates with the cost generated by the customer. Right now, there's a tendency to have residential customers subsidized by commercial industrial customers. As much as we'd like to lower the electric rates for all of the residential customers, that really hurts Minnesota from a competitive point of view. We might have really low residential electric rates, but if the people paying them don't have jobs, what have we accomplished? And so maybe just to bring those three together, taxes, permitting, and energy, let me read you an email that I got from a Minnesota manufacturer at the end of last year. And I've changed it. I want to protect the innocent in this case. You'll see why when I read it. But it's instructive, okay? This is what he writes. He says, we are working with the MPCA to secure an air permit so we can pursue a new line with our parent company. Costs continue to increase the longer it takes to secure the permit. We are looking at $40 to $45 million at the moment. Hopefully these numbers don't scare our headquarters away. We are hoping to get some direction from the MPCA early in 2011. We've been working with them since mid-2010. And then he goes on to say, we have a number of other ideas to invest money into Minnesota as long as the Minnesota business climate doesn't continue to deteriorate. My biggest concerns at the moment is the price of electricity. Our utility is killing us with their continuous rate increases, coupled with potential tax increases, as well as slow MPCA permitting process, and you can imagine my tough assignment. So here's a plant manager who not only wants to expand here, has plans to expand here, and he's just saying what, you know, and he's got to go to the headquarters and make the case. And this is the kind of challenge that he's up against, and these are great jobs. And we can't, if we lose these jobs, we will never replace them. Or if we lose the opportunity to add them here, they'll be difficult to replace. So there is work to be done. Fourth, I mentioned the workforce. I think the highest priority based on the Grow Minnesota visits is to close the achievement gap, to have it so that when somebody gets a high school diploma in Minnesota, we're not going to have employers saying, I can't teach them to read and write, that won't be an issue. And then fifth, healthcare. We need more opportunities, especially for smaller Minnesota businesses, to shop for healthcare and to buy it at a cost-competitive rate. And recently, the Mercer Consulting Group put out a study that showed that it cost almost $600 more per worker for health coverage in Minnesota than the national average. We got to close that gap. And then finally, and I mentioned this a little earlier, anything we can do to make it easier for Minnesota companies to reach a customer outside the U.S. is worth it, because the world economy is developing and it creates enormous opportunities for Minnesota businesses. We just need to help those companies, especially smaller ones, realize that it's really not that hard to become an exporter, and that there are resources available to kind of help them get through the process. If you want to learn more in more detail about Grow Minnesota and what we're hearing from Minnesota businesses, you can get that from our website. We're just about to update our annual report with the information that I've gone through today. And then finally, we welcome your questions, and we have more details on what I presented today, and we can get into that now, or I'm happy to come back and present it another time. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Blazer. And two things that I'd want to follow up with you on and open this up to more general questions. But the first is, and I'm still kind of amazed at your comment that in most instances, when you stop in on one of these companies or small businesses and say thank you, that's something they haven't heard. That's something they haven't heard from Minnesota or from Minnesotans. And so that, I guess, it leads me to the question of, are there other states that are connecting with their existing businesses in a better way, in a more organized way? And is the state government itself connecting with businesses? Because you guys have, you know, to your credit, you've been doing this for 8 years, and hopefully you've been getting that information back to the appropriate places and state agencies. But is some other state doing this in a better way and collecting all this information and then using it?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm not aware of any other state that has a private sector program like Grow Minnesota that engages, in our case, 54 local chambers or local economic development organizations. And, you know, Minnesota's got a great team of economic development professionals. What Grow Minnesota adds is a whole bunch of eyes and ears on what's going on in the economy. Because when we go see a business and the business says, hey, I got a problem, you know, our volunteer or our chamber executive, typically we don't have the resources to solve it, so we'll call somebody at Deed, or we'll call the local economic development professional, or we'll call the public works director. So we have a very strategic relationship with those professionals, but we add to their effort, you know, 54 sets of eyes and ears around the state. And frankly, since 2008, I know at the Department of Employment and Economic Development, they've begun doing many more retention visits. But the reality is, you know, with over 100,000 businesses in the state, you're never going to get around to everybody. But again, the more we do it, the more benefit we get. And I think somebody who's working as an economic development professional and working on specific deals, that tends to fill their day. They don't necessarily have the time to kind of get out and just check in with the customers. And that's what Grow Minnesota adds to the equation.
Well, and it might have been one of the two of you, but kind of burned into my memory is the theme that it's easier to get a company, an existing company that's already here, to expand than to hit the home run and bring some company across the border and start anew and start afresh in Minnesota. So I appreciate your focus on those who are already here, those have already made the decision and spent time and money and capital. So there's some lessons learned there. And then my second question, I guess it probably gets to your last slide on policy priorities, but I think Senator Peterson sounded this theme earlier, the lack of confidence in the business community right now. Maybe another way to say it is a lack of certainty that some have some cash on their hands, but until they know, you mentioned federal government and healthcare, until they have a better sense for how governments at all levels are going to treat them or react to their proposals, they're just kind of going to sit on that money and sit on those ideas. Do you see that kind of risk aversion and crisis of confidence in these interviews that you've had? Do you think that's a fair characterization?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think there's a real tension in many companies. They see opportunities, but they also see this kind of uncertain economy. And so that's why I think a lot of them, when they I think if you had the temporary employment agencies in here, they would tell you they're having a great year. So the way the companies are kind of balancing their risk is to take advantage of an opportunity for a new sale. But when it comes to adding workers, maybe to add them through a temporary arrangement just to hedge their bets a little bit. Mm-hmm. Because there is there is that tension. And I see a little bit less of it now than we did a year ago. I think there are more companies that are prepared to make investments. But there's still a long way to go. Where this climb out of this recession is going to take several years. Mr. Chair, can I add one other comment?
Please,
maybe?
Mr. Blazer.
Going back to your point about bringing companies here, I agree with you 100%. First and foremost, we need to work to retain the businesses that we have. But there is, I think, a growing opportunity, thanks to this world economy, to actually have an effective business attraction program in Minnesota. I don't know how to do it. I do think the only thing I do think is that if we try it, we would need to stick with it for like 5 years to see if it would work. And there are some folks around the state who are trying to develop attraction programs in the the Itasca group, for example. And I think we need to encourage those efforts on, because there probably is more attraction opportunity today than there was, say, 20 years ago. But we don't want those efforts to take away anything from the big job that we have of keeping the businesses that we have and providing good service to them.
Mm-hmm. Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Blazer, if I can ask a couple of different strains of questions. First, obviously, with our budget situation, there are going to be a lot of difficult choices this year. And you've talked about a couple of things. You've talked about, at least within the education system, what you've heard about K-12 versus higher education. I wonder if you would agree. I'm pretty sure I know it was Art Rolnick, who just retired as chief economist, senior VP and chief economist of the Fed, who said that the best economic development money was early education money. And certainly we've, as you suggest, you've heard concerns from business owners relative to K-12 and making sure kids are ready to work. As we're making budget decisions this year, would you suggest more of an emphasis on, say, early childhood? I'm not sure. So I'd like to know if you would agree or disagree with what Mr. Rolnick had to say relative to early childhood and whether or not we should emphasize early childhood in K-12 as opposed to higher education in terms of budget decisions.
Mr. Blazer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, based on what we're hearing from businesses, the K-12 system really needs the attention. And I'm not as knowledgeable as Dr. Rolnick on this, but we have heard over and over again that from early ed until third grade, children are learning to read, and then from third grade on, they read to learn. And so those children that didn't get those basics early on are really in pretty tough shape. It's really hard to make up that ground. So we think that the K-12 system really does need immediate attention. And frankly, we think that we can make a lot of progress by making some policy changes. So for example, the alternative licensure bill, getting changing the mix of folks that are working with our most difficult children. We think that's promising. It's worked in other parts of the country. We might need, and we ought to go in that direction. And that's an example of a change that we can make without necessarily finding more money.
Okay, and I appreciate that. And
Mr.
Chairman, if I can just continue for a minute. Because it's a dichotomy that we've dealt with and wrestled with, I don't think very successfully, in terms of how we view, we'll call it the E-12 system versus the higher ed system. I know, Mr. Chairman, you had a bill that I think we gave short shrift to several years ago, which I thought was pretty interesting, where I hope I don't misstate this, but you suggested setting up or passing legislation that was similar to the Federal Base Closing Commission, where we would look at what schools, higher education schools, institutions to close around the state in terms of community colleges or state universities that were underutilized or where they could be consolidated. And I'm not sure we ever gave that a fair hearing to take a look at what's going to work in terms of higher education. I don't, you know, you and I were both on the higher ed division. I don't serve on that any longer. I don't know if you're still there or not, but, with a $6.2 billion deficit, if we have to make these kinds of choices between K-12 and higher ed, maybe we need to explore what's become an overbuilt higher ed system around Minnesota, as opposed to where we take money away from, say, the E to 3 system. So I appreciate the comments, Mr. Blazer, relative to how to make some of those distinctions and efforts.
That's it. Senator Cohen, your memory's pretty good. And I also remember my friend Senator Tomasoni really not liking my bill. I think we'll have some time to get into that. I have Senator Lilly and Senator Torres-Ray and Senator Tomasoni. So, Senator Lilly.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Blazer, Mr. Olson, thank you for coming today and sharing this information. My business has had the benefit of participating in the Grow Minnesota conversations. My business partner, I have also participated from the process of interviewing other businesses, so I have that insight. But my business partner did not have that insight. And I can tell you that the impact that this had on my business partner was phenomenal. He felt that the state of Minnesota, that the state chamber, was paying attention to him and valuing what he is doing, what we are doing as far as hiring employees and keeping the jobs in the state of Minnesota. So I don't think we can underplay or underrate at all the service that this Grow Minnesota program is offering in the state of Minnesota. In this conversation, there are no jobs without the job creators. And we need to find ways to work with businesses, work with those job creators to make sure that they have that ability to grow the jobs. We've talked about clarity and vision and visibility in businesses today. And that comes both from economic visibility. If a business is making a decision to hire employees, we need to have that business economic visibility of what is happening in the economy and how does that impact my business decisions. We need to have a tax structure visibility of how does the tax structure affect my business. Regulation visibility. If the regulations are changing throughout this process, that limits my ability to grow jobs. And then labor costs and ability to hire the right people also affect that. My question really comes to what are some specific areas that you were hearing from folks about regulations and how they impact a person, a business, a job creator's ability to hire new people? What are some specific areas that you heard about?
Mr. Blazer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Lilly, I frequently hear about our air and water permitting processes, the length of time, the uncertainty. We also will other kind of regulatory related issues, issues, for example, with the working effectively with OSHA. A lot of employers kind of want to try and address a problem before they have it, and I think they struggle a little bit getting the kinds of assistance that they need in order to avoid a problem in the future. They're, you know, nervous about inviting somebody in to look at the place because they worry, they know they want advice, not a penalty. Okay. And what's interesting is that when you can hook up with the right person, you can get somebody to help that company more often than not, at least in the OSHA example. But the companies have a hard time navigating that process. We hear a little bit about, from companies when they're trying to hire a certain skill set and they can't find it, their ability to work with their local community or technical college. I think actually that's gotten better the last couple of years because the presidents of those institutions are out visiting companies more frequently than they ever did in the past. And there, I think the challenge is when the president gets back to be able to change the curriculum so that it reflects what he or she heard from the businesses that they visited with. So there are issues, but the good news is that we found that frequently there's a solution. We just need to kind of connect the dots.
I've got Senator Torres Ray next. I got you down, Senator Cohen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate this presentation because it just gives us a brief overview of key elements that we need to understand. So I really appreciate that you did this in our first day. I have a question related to two very challenging issues you present to us. One is that you are telling us that the business sector, the people you interview, talk about creating a better environment for all, and that they clearly define that as investing in education, infrastructure, health reform, competent workforce through education, that they clearly see that as the core element for developing business in Minnesota and growing business. At the same time, the individuals you interview said that they prioritize down raising taxes and not increasing revenue. And I wonder if you had the opportunity to engage in a conversation as how they see these two pieces working together. Because we cannot develop infrastructure and education and provide health care to all of their employees if we don't have revenue, if we don't have money. So how do they propose that we address that?
Mr. Blazer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Torres Ray, their view, they see the $32 billion that the state expects to collect over during the next biennium. I think that's the best revenue estimate that we have. They see that as, one, an enormous amount of money. Secondly, they see it as about $1.5 billion more than we collected in the current biennium. And a lot of them, when they look at their own balance sheet, they say, "That's, I'd love to be in that position." And so they think that there's plenty of revenue, and what they would say to you folks and to the governor is that focus on the $32 billion. Identify priorities, identify measurable outcomes related to those priorities, and then and appropriate the $32 billion based on that. And do that as fast as you can. And then see where you are. See how far down the list of state priorities you can get with the $32 billion that we have. These businesses that we visit with, and others, I'm sure, you know, they face every day a call from a customer who says, I want more stuff at a lower price. And so their expectations of state and local government is exactly the same. They expect a high-quality service at the same or a lower price. And so for them, it's just business as usual, and their expectation is that you folks will deal with your priorities the same way that they do, deliver more at the same or a lower price.
Senator Tomasoni.
And, Mr. Chairman, unfortunately, government isn't business, and we've proved that over and over again. And for the people who think that it's just very easy to cut and cut and cut, all those cuts cost money, and somebody has to pay for it, because when you give tax reductions, it ends up being less revenue into the general fund. And as we know, something has to be cut when we have less general fund revenue. But that was just a segue into what you just got done saying. I didn't actually put my hand up for this. I would be remiss if I didn't say I agree completely with you about the permitting process. I'd be very surprised if the email you read wasn't from PolyMet, and I can tell you that they've been in the process of trying to develop the opportunity for non-ferrous minerals in Minnesota for over 5 years and costing over $25 million to just go get to the environmental impact statement, and that's not even getting to the permits yet. So I can see where that can be a problem. And as we all know, energy is probably a result of some of the policies that have been passed and a result of energy companies having to do some things like cleaning up their stacks and making huge investments and trying to pass on the cost to the ratepayers. And those are some of the realities of the time we live in, I guess, and I'm not sure what we can do about that either. But I do want to point out that when you mentioned magnetation is, for those of you who don't know, it's a new company on the Iron Range that has figured out a way to use the tailings that have been put on the ground that have about 30% iron in them and beneficate them so that they turn into usable iron ore, and it's called concentrate. Actually, it's not taconite and it's not iron ore, so it's concentrate. But that company wouldn't exist without a big government subsidy. And one of the things that I find interesting in your report is about not being able to find people with specialty skills. I have a company on the Iron Range that complains about it all the time, and they've been there for a real long time. And one of their problems is that the rate they pay for welders is way below the rate that the mining companies pay. And so the welders go to the mining companies instead of going to them. And so I don't know if that's a reason for these companies not being able to find specialty people, but I do think that when you add it all into the K-12 education system, the cuts that we've experienced over the years, the things that we've learned in education about, and Senator Cohen just brought it up, about early childhood being one of the ways that we can make our education system better. Another one of the things that we've proved is that smaller class sizes turn out to be ways that kids learn better. And so over the years, when all these cuts have been put down on our school system, and people can say it's been held harmless, but when school systems are held harmless, but money just gets shifted around, what the schools do is, the first thing they do is they cut the vocational schools. They cut the vocational courses because those are the most expensive. And there's kids that learn well in traditional settings. There's other kids that learn better when they can be hands-on and touch things. And we actually are having a problem, I think, in some of these kids that would come out of the schools with they'd be a welder, they'd be a carpenter, they'd be an electrician if they had the opportunity in the high schools. But those courses don't exist anymore because of the cuts we've been making over the years. And so a lot of what has happened as a result of underfunding is a result of some of the things that you're hearing. And I think that when all this stuff comes down to it, what you end up having is you have a problem with money. And I think the comment that we get very often about companies not feeling comfortable in hiring right now is probably a pretty normal reaction to this economy. I'd be nervous too if I were an owner to hire people, because who knows what's going to happen in this economy, and I think that's been proven over and over again. So I appreciate what you've done here, because we do a lot of this type of stuff up on the Iron Range also, and businesses say thank you very much for coming out to try and help us to figure out how to go to the next step, and I think it's an important thing to do. But I think from the government side of it, what we're talking about is more money, whether we think we are or not.
Mr. Chair?
I'm going to hold you off there for a second, Mr. Blazer, because I listened closely to Senator Tomasoni, and I agree with about half of what he says, which is pretty good on any given day. But I don't think there was a question
in
there.
You do better than I ever did.
Okay. I don't think there was a question in there, and I have a couple others who want to ask questions. So if you do have a hold on to your thoughts that Senator Tomasoni may have inspired, and I want to go to Senator DeCryf and
make sure we get to all the members who've raised their hands for you.
Thank you, Chairman Michel.
I didn't ask a question.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I'd like to thank the Chamber of Commerce for bringing forward this Grow Minnesota. I have a couple of comments. Number one is our business environment in Minnesota is I think a key terminology, because we can't make businesses come here. We can't make businesses stay here. All we can do is create the environment where they can be successful and want to stay here. And that's so I think that's – I'm echoing what you're saying, and I'm thanking you for bringing that forward. You did bring forward a point about foreign money and foreign markets, national markets and foreign markets. And I'm wondering – I have two questions. My first one is, based on that, are you doing anything or do you have any ideas on how we might help to facilitate, as a state government, the exports? Because to me that would be a key factor to help companies in some way to facilitate exports out of the nation. I like the idea of bringing foreign money into this country because into this country and our state, it enriches us. As we send money out, I think it makes us poorer. So I like the idea of the exports. That's my first question. Do you have any ideas along those lines?
Mr. Blazer.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I think the work of the Minnesota Trade Office is important and likely to get more important. That office helps many Minnesota companies with either learning to export or helping them understand the opportunities in various countries. And I think it's a fairly low cost operation, and we get a lot of mileage out of the work of the Trade Office. So that's one thing. Secondly, this last year, we helped a couple of Minnesota companies go to a meeting in Winnipeg, Manitoba, where there was a gathering of other small businesses that wanted to do international trade. And all we did was hold their hand and get them to go there where they could meet with potential customers from about 30 countries around the world. It was, if you will, kind of speed dating for exporters. And so we're looking for more opportunities like that to introduce especially smaller companies to exporting. But we have a wonderful and very effective resource in the state's World Trade Office.
Okay. Thank you. I have one other question.
Senator DeCrye.
Senator Lilly touched on this, regulations, and are you doing anything, or are you sending out questionnaires to businesses? I've said before, I cannot know what the overreaching government regulations and how they might be affecting a manufacturing plant or an auto dealership. You know, there's a lot of different, you know, you did talk about the fact that a lot of them are air and water related. But have you done any work, because I think it would be valuable if we would send out questionnaires to our businesses and not look for pie-in-the-sky things, but realistic, overreaching government regulations that we can reel in here in Minnesota to make our businesses more competitive with neighboring states and countries.
Mr. Blazer.
Mr. Chair, Senator, in our Grow Minnesota visits, we ask about a whole bunch of other regulatory requirements. And I could share some of those results with you. The thing that really comes off the page are the environmental requirements. Mm-hmm. So we do ask about the others, but what we hear about most frequently is that portion of the regulatory environment.
Okay, thank you.
I have Senator Howe, then Senator Cohen, then Senator Nelson, and then we'll try to close up shop here. Senator Howe.
Right.
And we've got other big companies like Red Wing Shoe Company and Capital Safety. I'm wondering, is there other things that local governments do that hinder growth?
Mr. Blazer.
Mr. Chair, Senator Howe, I think in some respects, the way they handle their local permitting. We've got a project right now in Rochester, for example, that the Rochester Chamber is working with the city to review their permitting processes to try and make that process move in a more orderly and efficient fashion. And we'll get the results of that work here in about a month or 6 weeks. And if they do come up with a better way to do it, we'll share that with other communities around the state. I think that's one thing for sure. And you know, beyond that, the it's doing the basics. I think some local governments, some cities, do a much better job of using the resource that they have to provide high quality services. And a lot of the cities, I think, and counties right now are working pretty hard to rethink the way they provide those services. And one thing that we could do would be to make those ideas for restructuring, redesigning local services more generally publicized around the state so that other communities can take advantage of them. We, State Chamber, we're working with six communities right now on local service redesign projects, and but there's a lot more innovation going on around the state right now, and a challenge is to kind of get that information out so that other communities can take advantage of it, because it's like I said, you know, run a good state, well, run a good city, run a good county. It's doing those basics effectively and well at the lowest possible price, and I think there's a lot more we could do to help local governments do that.
Senator Howe, you had one more question, is that right?
Sure. I know retention visits are very important, and I've been for the authority, and I've been for any economic development agency, not only to take the chamber, but also local elected official, whether it be a city council member, a mayor, or a county commissioner. But Mr. Olson, can you tell me, as far as the memberships of the chambers, how many of the offices, the local offices, actually do
Mr. Chair, Charles. Senator Helm, as of today, about 54 local chambers. All of that data rolls back to our office, which is what you've heard today. But the good news is we're also combining some of the data that Bill mentioned that Deed is making more of these visits. We're also we've also sharing software to combine that data as well. So we feel like we're learning a lot, and we're getting a lot of good information from, like I said, 54 local chambers. And they're doing a lot of the assistance work as well. And one thing, if I could just add on the regulation piece thank you, Mr. Chair, is I think one of the things we hear, and it's hard for some of these companies to say, here's the problem I had, because they're going to get regulated again, and they're going to deal with that agency again. So it's hard for them to say, you know, this is XYZ company, and I'm AMCON block, and here's my problem, because you're going to get regulated again. But I think one of the things we hear is just for some of those regulators to say, you know, I'm actually here to help you, instead of kind of the feeling that a business gets is I'm here to regulate you, or I'm here to see if I can't penalize you somehow. And I think if we just change that attitude a little bit as to regulation, that a lot of these companies would obviously feel a lot better. Sorry, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, because I want to follow up on that and follow up on questions from Senator Lilly and Senator DeCroix, because I find it relatively disturbing to hear some of this conversation about the permitting process kind of gone askance, the regulatory framework. Obviously, as a legislature, we pass statutes. We don't pass regulations. Sometimes there's a regulatory statute, but that tends to be the exception to the rule. So what's been going wrong over the last several years? I didn't serve on Senator Metzen's previous committee, so I'm not sure if there was discussion, Senator Metzen, on your committee about this. But what's been going wrong over the last several years in terms of from a state perspective, the state agencies, in terms of not helping appropriately with the regulatory framework, not providing access to permitting? I mean, my sense of working with these commissioners on the economic development end of it, Commissioner Wilson, Commissioner McElroy, is they've been superb commissioners. And so what I'm wondering is, what's been going wrong? Has the administration, what should we direct Governor Dayton to do to change the tone within these agencies relative to working with business so that they're a partner, not an adversary? Has that been the issue?
Has it been an issue of simply lax enforcement, where there's just been kind of a laissez-faire attitude? Or has it been a question of cutbacks to state agencies, where the personnel is not available to actually make sure the permitting takes place on time or in a speedy process? Because this is an issue that we've started to hear about over the last couple of years, and I'm not sure how this has kind of snuck up on us, where we hadn't heard about this previously.
Well, Senator Metz, do you want to mention something?
Thank the chamber for coming forward with some of these ideas, but help us a little bit more and give us some concrete ways we can go about it. But I wasn't going to say this, but when I chaired this committee, I mailed a couple of letters to the chamber, Mr. Hickey from the small business, whatever that is, whatever it's called, and to local chambers and said, help.
I don't know.
Tell us what to do, how to help in this area, particularly in the permitting. I never heard back. And I don't want to ruffle anything today because I've tried to be a friend of the business community. So it's not like Senator Cohen, we haven't asked and reached out. Well, we have.
But, Mr. Chairman, my question is,
Senator Cohen,
separate from what the chamber responded to or not, I mean, the chamber is doing their job. My question is, what's been happening within state agencies in the last several years? Where either as a legislature we've not been on top of them, or the governor hasn't been on top of them, or again has been a question of lack of manpower, so that the reason that a particular business hasn't heard back on the permitting is there isn't somebody there to do it.
Mr. Blazer, we've teed up an easy one for you.
So I'll take it.
Mr. Olson.
Olson wants to take it.
Because that's what I do.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I think it actually comes to one of your earlier points, and I think what could Governor Dayton do? I think you can have the greatest leader of the PCA in the history of agencies. But if the tone underneath that particular leader is, we're here to regulate, we're here to penalize, we're going to make this process miserable, it doesn't matter how great that commissioner is. And I think that has actually been one of the problems. It's the tone and the customer service approach, not so much of the leadership, but of some of the rank and file employees of some of these agencies. And we'd just like to work with them to say, okay, it's important we have these businesses. Can we kind of change up how we deal with them? And we don't think it's been a factor of number of staff, at least based on kind of the research we've seen. There seems to be the people to do it. It's just that certain things seem to take longer than they should. I mean, if there's a painting operation, shouldn't there be a permit that's a template for a painting operation so that somebody doesn't have to start from scratch? There's some simple things we've been trying to push, very honestly, that have fallen on deaf ears.
Well, Senator Michelle, Mr. Chairman.
I want to give Senator Nelson a shot here, so can you
I'll be quick.
Thank you.
So I just want to follow up. Was this ever conveyed, Mr. Olson, to Governor Plenty? I'm not speaking belittling, but if it's simply a question of kind of, please and thank you, and just making sure folks out there are aware of what's going on, was this ever conveyed to the governor as to what was happening within the agencies, if it was as simple as that to correct?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, yes, it was. And actually, the governor was helpful, unfortunately, had to be helpful with us on a couple of permits where he had to push a little harder than maybe he should have to help a company at least get the attention, not to get the permit, but to at least get the attention that the company thought we thought they should receive. So, yes, we made it clear. And like I said, I don't know how many PCA commissioners there were during the Plenty administration. I know there were a few. But if the rank and file aren't buying into a customer service approach, it's tough for them to make changes.
Yeah. Well, and the beauty, Senator Cohen, is we have a clean slate. Mm-hmm. It was a clean slate to move forward, and so I appreciate you, your organization, bringing this forward. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your patience, too. Mr. Blazer, Mr. Olson, thank you very much for bringing this today. As a member of the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce, I know I've worked with you on the government forums and government relations committees before, and I know you come to us with a wealth of information, more than what we've seen today. You know the voice of our job providers, And I would like to kind of follow up with some of the things that Senator Howe and Senator DeKreif had mentioned. As far as looking at this, your last slide up, or the one that's up there now, policy priorities, I think that's really important for our committee. I mean, that's our sphere of influence here is policy and what type of legislative things we can do to make better policy for improve our job climate. And I'm wondering, can you provide for us, I'm sure you've have some of this already from your many conversations with the Minnesota job providers, you know, a list of those specific things that we can be looking at in this committee, those type of things where legislation, because that's really what our focus is. We can't, you know, we want to run a good state, but our focus is on what we can do here as far as good legislation that's going to help our job climate. And what are those particular things? I'd really like to see those list of legislative things that we might be able to implement or research that are going to help us, whether it be in smarter regulation or those areas where we can, like on education, we've talked about our workforce. I've been visiting with superintendents in southeast Minnesota, and I have a list from them of 25 things that they believe, legislative things, that can be looked at and put into place to help improve education for our K-12 system that's very student-focused and performance-focused. And I'm wondering if you could get for us that type of list of legislative things that we can look at in this committee that can help us improve our job climate.
Yes.
Mr. Olson.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank members. We've gone a little over time, but I think in I'll give you a closing comment if you'd like, Mr. Olson, but I just wanted to note, let's see, we hit health care, early childhood, taxes, permitting, an application at the Department of Health. I think we, in an hour and 45 minutes, we came pretty close to touching every possible committee and every piece of state government.
We've missed stadiums.
Well, maybe Mr. Olson in his final remarks can address stadiums, but I would suggest not. Mr. Olson, briefly.
Then I follow the lead of the chair, Mr. Chair. But I just, truthfully, I want to thank you for the work that you do. And I think it sounds very simple. But I think if all of us would thank a business person every once in a while for being here and then ask him or her what we can do to help, the climate would improve dramatically.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. And thank you, members, for your participation and at this level so quickly. So we stand adjourned.